Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. John Hominuk with New York Metro Weather, 33 and rain. Thank you for joining us, another edition of Weather Eyes. It has been a while since we've been able to get on and get the team together here for a radio show, but obviously the weather has been quite interesting over the last couple of weeks. We have seen an uptick in tropical activity with obviously the impacts, the devastating impacts of Hurricane Harvey, and now we have Irma in the Atlantic Ocean, which is strengthening very rapidly and has become a significantly powerful Category 5 hurricane that is making its way, unfortunately, towards the Leeward Islands, the Caribbean. And then we'll continue westward on a path that takes it towards the southeast United States, which is said specifically in a vague sense because we have quite a bit of uncertainty in regards to the track of the storm system itself, and we are going to discuss tonight a couple things. So just give you guys an overview of what we are looking at. One of the things that we are going for really is going to be to go through the agenda and kind of make sure that everyone has an idea of what's going on. So we're going to discuss initially the current status of the storm. We're going to go over why it has strengthened today, what we are looking at in terms of the technical aspects of the system itself, and then break down kind of the next 12 to 24 hours, because while the system is pretty far away from the United States impacts in terms of the actual mainland, the islands in the Atlantic Ocean are going to be impacted as early as tonight into tomorrow. So we're going to be discussing the impacts in the next 12 to 24 hours, why we expect them to be as severe as we expect them to be, and then kind of lead the discussion forward over the next couple of days. So that's kind of the agenda. We're going to break down the system as it stands right now, which as of the latest APM advisory from the National Hurricane Center, the storm Hurricane Irma, had a maximum sustained winds of 185 miles an hour, which is well within the threshold for a Category 5. And the minimum central pressure had dropped to 916 millibars, which is quite impressive. And both of those numbers put the storm itself within the upper echelon of hurricanes in the Atlantic Ocean, specifically in the region that Irma is in right now. It is the strongest in that region in the history of the satellite era. So we do have Jack Sillen. He is joining us here, 33 and rain, weather.us. We're very happy to have him aboard. Are you on? Can you hear us? And is everything working on your end?
Yeah, so I can hear you. Hopefully you can hear me too. What a storm this is. Oh.
I got you. Everything's coming in loud and clear on our end. Yeah.
Awesome. Sounds great. So yeah, this is a pretty amazing storm meteorologically speaking, and a terrible storm for all the folks who are in this path. And unfortunately, there are a lot of folks in this path. We see first the impacts to the Lesser Antilles coming tonight and tomorrow, and then as we move the system west northwest through just north of the Greater Antilles in Ports, Florida. Unfortunately, there are going to be a lot of people in the path of this very strong system. So we'll break it all down here. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, we're glad to have you aboard. It is obviously a really exciting time in terms of meteorology, but as you said very well, it's unfortunately going to be more of a sad situation for many folks who are in the immediate path of the storm system. And, you know, oftentimes I think it's easy to overlook impacts on the storm is on its way towards the mainland of the United States. So we'll try to, you know, do our best to analyze the system as it stands right now. The latest recon flight that went into Irma found some interesting observations, some of which supported stronger winds within the northeast quadrant. I believe the number was 167 knots, which is really impressive. But what we're looking at now is pretty much a steady strengthening of the storm system. The pressure dropped to 916. So, Jack, what have you observed here over the last couple of hours in terms of the storm itself and the meteorology of what's going on inside this hurricane, aside from obviously it being just a powerhouse Category 5?
Yeah, so this is an amazing storm. If we look at some of the satellite imagery coming in from the system, you can see it's very well organized, nearly perfectly. You have incredibly intense thunderstorm activity near and surrounding the center completely, You have a perfectly defined circular eye with very warm temperatures in the middle of the eye, indicating that it's completely cleared out all around the system. You have air moving away from the top of the storm in the upper levels. So you see that with the cirrus clouds kind of venting away from the storm, and that's an indication that it's breathing, so to speak. All indications are right now, and the recon is confirming this, that this is just about as strong and healthy a hurricane as you could possibly think of. There's basically very little that I would do to change. If I was to design a perfect hurricane, there's very little I would do to change from what Irma has now. As I said, there's basically, it's just perfect all around the eye, the thunderstorm activity, the outflow. You see it all with the system, and it's amazing to see as someone who's fascinated by the weather, and it's terrible to see as someone who knows there are going to be a lot of people really negatively impacted by the system down the line.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. As you look at systems like this, I think you described it really well. The storm system is breathing really well. There's very little, meteorologically, when you look at storms like this and you try to take a look, is the storm going to strengthen? Is it going to weaken? What are the signs here in the immediate short term? The first thing you do oftentimes when you're doing your analysis is to take a look at, what are the drawbacks? What you look at the setup and say, what are the things that, and in this situation, you could sit down for a half hour, 40 minutes and look at the observations, look at the surrounding environment in terms of meteorology. And there are very, very few things, if any, that are acting against this storm. It's almost in an ideal environment.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I'm looking at some of the data we have on weather.us from the ECMWF model, valid tonight and this afternoon. And you can see that basically all systems are go for this storm to remain incredibly intense and incredibly powerful as it moves through the Lesser Antilles. There's very high mid-level moisture, so there's no dry air that can work into the system. You're seeing basically there's no relative humidity values at 700 millibars, so that's basically about 10,000 feet. The closest dry air you can get, relative humidity below, 40 or 50%, hundreds of miles from the center. And you can see on satellite, there's just no dry air to be seen around the storm. So that's one impact or one factor you typically look for, is there going to be dry air working into the system? Because if you get dry air, then that can interrupt the thunderstorm activity and cause it to become less intense and less organized. So that's one potential problem that hurricanes can have, and it's one problem that Irma does not have as it goes forward in the next few days. Another thing that you typically look for is wind shear or winds in the upper levels of the atmosphere that can kind of act to misalign the thunderstorms in the center of the storm. So if you have too much wind shear, then you're going to get the thunderstorms to kind of get out of sync with each other, and that'll weaken the hurricane as a whole. And as you can see with the outflow in the upper levels and also on the European model data, there's hardly any shear, in fact, basically zero shear, as the system moves to the west-northwest. The only thing that could potentially impact it at all would be interaction with the Greater Antilles. So while it's forecast to move just north of the coast of Hispaniola, which is notoriously effective at breaking up the inner cores of some of these very strong hurricanes. Currently, Irma is not forecast to make landfall there, but you're still going to have it influence the circulation because as air flows into the storm down those very tall mountains, it'll warm and it'll dry. So that'll throw a little bit of a wrench into the inflow of Irma. But I think the closest thing that we're going to see to any real weakening of the storm below Category 5 status is going to come when it likely is going to make landfall in Cuba on Saturday. And between now and then, there's basically nothing that's going to indicate a sustained weakening of the storm. Although it is important to note that we could see a dip, the wind speed dip a little bit if the storm undergoes something called an eyewall replacement cycle. So that happens when basically the storm the thunderstorm's in the very center of the storm, the eye wall. They basically spin too fast for their own good, and they kind of get unstable and out of whack, and they eventually collapse and are replaced by new thunderstorms that are more stable, a little bit farther out in the storm. So this is something that happens in very intense hurricanes like Irma, and it can weaken the winds by, you know, 5 or 10, even 20 miles an hour, but they typically don't last for more than 12 hours, and so far, Irma has undergone several of these, and they have not slowed her down one bit, so all systems are go for, unfortunately, a very strong hurricane to move west-northwest in the coming days.
Yeah, very well put, very well said.
Thank you.
You know, the eye wall replacement cycle is the next thing I was going to get into in terms of, you know, the storm system over the next 12 hours as it makes its approach towards the first real land that it's interacted with at all. And it's already long life cycle all the way from the eastern tropical Atlantic Ocean. And we've kind of seen some hints of the potential of an eye wall replacement cycle. Some of the drop zones that have gone in, we have seen those basically, to break it down for the public or people that are not overly technical, you know, as Jack put it, you get this band of thunderstorms that forms outside the original eye wall as the original eye wall goes out of whack a little bit. So the first signs of that usually come from increasing wind or falling pressure outside of the actual current eye wall, so concentric eye wall, so to speak. And we have seen that on some of the data that has come back, but there haven't really been, based on the microwave data and things like that, there haven't really been any dramatic telltale signs of an eye wall replacement cycle. Jack, have you seen anything that has indicated that is, you know, coming in the coming hours, or do you think that pretty much the concentric eye walls are working in tandem right now?
Yeah, so I'm seeing a few signs, especially in the Hurricane Hunter data that we're getting in both the radar data and some of the data that's actually collected from the plane itself. So just looking at one of the latest recon passes, you do see a little bit of a double peak structure to the wind. So when the plane goes through, it measures the wind speed. You can see usually you'll have just a single very high peak, you know, where the most intense winds are found right in the middle of that eye wall in the very center of the storm. And when you get an eye wall replacement cycle, slowly those innermost winds will start to die down a little bit. And the outer peak, the second maximum, basically, grows to dominate. So we're starting to see signs of that second maximum develop with that concentric eye wall you mentioned. You can see that on some of the radar imagery that we're getting from the islands and from the hurricane islands. So I do think that there's an eye wall replacement cycle that's kind of on deck at the moment. But nevertheless, even if you see the intensity, you know, downgraded, so to speak, you know, from 185 miles an hour, which is puts Irma tied for the second most intense hurricane in the Atlantic ever observed by us. So even if you go, you know, down from that crazy intensity, you know, something, you know, is 5, 10, 15 miles an hour weaker than that, it's still going to be a heck of a storm for those northern Leeward Islands. I sure wouldn't want to be caught outside in 175-mile-an-hour wind gusts. So even if we see a little bit of weakening caused by that eye wall replacement cycle, this remains a very dangerous, very powerful storm that's set to cause some catastrophic impacts, I think it's safe to say, for parts of the Leeward Islands.
I would agree. Again, very well said. And I agree also in terms of the ERC, or the eye wall replacement cycle. Each recon flight that has gone in, we've been able to observe a little more of that double maximum. But it's not quite there yet. The main eye seems to still be pretty much in control. So it'll be interesting to see. Like you said, it seems to be on deck, but not necessarily occurring yet. You know, over the next... During the show, actually, we're going to get a recon flight into the northeast eye wall. There's that second plane is out there right now. I believe the last I saw it was heading on a southwest trajectory into the eye wall. It just went through the eye about 20 minutes ago, flew around the east side, and is now going back in. So we should get some very valuable new data coming into the northeast eye wall of Irma, and we will share that as we get it. So that's a good recap of the current status, and it kind of leads us into the impacts over the islands here over the next 24 to probably 36 hours, and just sticking into the near and short term. You know, as you stated, we have some islands that are really in a precarious position here over the next couple hours, because you have one of the strongest hurricanes in Atlantic history bearing down on them. It seems to be strengthening as it approaches. You know, what is your suggestion here for these islands? Mine obviously would be, I would hope that hurricane preparations are already complete. But for those folks that are still there, haven't been able to complete their preparations, you know, as this storm approaches the islands, it's going to very likely be a catastrophic situation. What are your thoughts here over the next 24 to 36 hours as we look at these initial islands, and then we watch the storm make a move towards the northern side of Puerto Rico?
Yeah, so I think if you're in, you know, Antigua, Barbuda, those northeastern leeward islands, your hurricane preparations should be offset and done by now. You're already seeing tropical storm conditions developing on these islands. One thing to note is that Irma is a fairly consolidated storm. It has a wide wind field of hurricane force winds, a wide swath of hurricane force winds, but the really devastating impacts, you know, those 185 mile an hour sustained winds that are capable of destroying almost anything in their path, those winds are confined just to that innermost eye wall that we've been talking about, that very innermost core of crazy intense thunderstorms. So these islands in the past, they're small targets for this storm. So hopefully we see sometimes these storms, especially if they're undergoing eye wall replacement cycles, they'll wobble a little bit, 15 or 20 miles, just as, you know, all of the air and wind and rain is all wrapping around the system. It can be a little bit unstable in its path, similar if you think of a spinning top. So that's a great analogy for a hurricane. If you spin a top, you know, the top itself is rotating very rapidly, similarly to the winds inside one of these hurricanes. And the top will move along the table, you know, in a general direction, but it'll also wobble a little bit. So what I'm really hopeful, what I'm really hoping for here is to see a wobble that puts, you know, some of these islands just away from the worst of the worst. But even if you get one of those wobbles, you're still looking at winds well over 100 miles an hour. If you're in those islands and happen to be listening, take any measures that you can to get to the lowest level of your house, and hopefully inside a very sturdy, you know, concrete, protect yourself from flying debris if you're in those areas. If you're in places, as you mentioned, Puerto Rico is next up for this system. You still have time to prepare in places like Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico likely won't feel the impacts for another, 12, 24 hours before you start seeing tropical storm conditions develop, and then hurricane conditions will follow tomorrow during the afternoon and evening hours. Hopefully the storm, the core of the storm, is going to track just north of Puerto Rico, sparing them the worst impacts. But if you're in the Puerto Rico area, a hurricane warning has been issued by the National Weather Service. So take precautions, stock up on supplies, secure any objects that may become flying debris if you get hurricane force winds. So, and follow the instructions of the local National Weather Service. There are lots of great resources out there for what specific people and specific places should do to prepare for this storm coming in.
That's a great way to put it. I think, you know, specifically when you look at Barbuda, I'm concerned about them in regards to the path, because they are solidly within the heading of Irma at the current moment. And even wobbles to the west or north, you know, it doesn't really appear to make much of a difference. As you said, you know, luckily if there's one takeaway here, it's that the most intense winds, which unfortunately are ridiculously intense at, you know, 180 miles an hour, are within a pretty small area, which is fairly typical for tropical systems. But this one, it's very compact. that in terms of the extreme intensity of the winds, but the hurricane force winds extend out pretty wide away from the eye. So just before we move towards the greater mainland United States, what's your opinion generally on the track of the storm system as it makes an approach towards Puerto Rico? We've gotten a couple inquiries about Puerto Rico itself, and my opinion was pretty strongly that the northern half of Puerto Rico appears to fare much worse than the southern half, especially if the storm does move a little bit more south of west over the next 12 hours. The National Hurricane Center is forecasting the center to be just to the northeast of the Puerto Rico northern coast at 2 p.m. on Wednesday. So that, you know, when you look at the tightly wound compact Hurricane Irma, I would think that the northern side of Puerto Rico could be in some trouble, especially when compared to the southern side.
Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely agree there. Northern Puerto Rico is going to get quite the storm from Irma. Latest model projections, and as you said, the Hurricane Center forecast shows the core of Irma passing just to the north and east of the northeast tip of Puerto Rico. But as you said, the storm has been a little bit unpredictable in its track, and the margin of error for Puerto Rico is really quite small here. If you see you know, just a shift a few degrees south in heading of the storm, you know, if it's going, you know, west-southwest, west as opposed to west-northwest, you know, just very small changes in the track of the storm. You're looking at the center of Irma forecast to be, you know, maybe 30 or 50 miles from the northeast tip of Puerto Rico. That's a very, very small margin here. You get one or two mistimed wobbles, and you're putting parts of the north coast of Puerto Rico right in the eye wall of Irma. And one thing that is definitely concerning to me is we've been talking about that eye wall replacement cycle. So one thing that happens in an eye wall replacement cycle is that the eye expands. As the innermost eye wall collapses, you see that second concentric eye wall, which is going to be larger in diameter, that is going to take over, and the strongest winds are going to be focused in that area. So that makes the core of Irma expand a little bit and the wind field of Irma expand. We've already seen this several times in the past few days. Storm has undergone a few eye wall replacement cycles. And why I'm concerned about that is that it makes the core of Irma a bigger target, basically. It's easier for a larger system to bring extreme impacts to land masses near its path. So I think if you're along the north coast, especially the northeast coast of Puerto Rico, you have to watch the system extremely closely as it makes a very close approach, and take precautions now to protect your life and your property, because this is a very serious situation for some of these areas. Along the south coast, I think it's pretty safe to say at this point that the core, the eye wall of Irma, is not likely to impact those areas. But with a storm, you know, we've been talking about that wide radius of hurricane force winds. You could have the center of Irma pass 100 miles to your north, and you're still looking at tropical storm, maybe even hurricane force winds along the south coast of Puerto Rico. So definitely take some of those same preparations we've been discussing. Stockpile some supplies, be prepared for power outages and not being able to get around, and secure any items that might become flying debris. Even in 50-mile-an-hour winds, you know, you can see some light stuff get wafted around in those. You don't need 150-plus-mile-an-hour winds to cause big problems. So, yeah, I think the island of Puerto Rico should take this very seriously.
Very well said. I was actually going to touch on that, the eye wall replacement cycle, because as you said, it's very important to note that a lot of times when these things occur, the area of convection that takes over is actually outside of the initial eye wall. So you do get some expansion, and the eye typically becomes a little bit larger, and the winds expand a little bit, and the storm can often strengthen after the eye wall replacement cycle. And when you look at a situation like this, where you have the north shore and especially the northeast shore of Puerto Rico so precariously close to the track of Irma as it is, and then you expand that eye wall a little bit more, you're really coming close to having that eye wall running along the coast, which would be obviously destructive especially if that replacement cycle does occur and the storm begins to strengthen again in the next 12 to 24 hours. But in the meantime, we have Barbuda, which is right in the NHC forecast path. Actually, interestingly, the forecast position on the intermediate advisory, the 12-hour forecast puts the center, the eye of the system, right over the island of Barbuda at 2 o'clock a.m. So obviously a really, really dangerous situation for them and the island of St. John's, which is to the south by about 40 or 50 miles. And that's going to be the first land that this major Category 5 hurricane will interact with, and it'll happen tonight. As discussed, that will take the storm system on a northwest heading, and we got through Puerto Rico, and obviously the storm, as it continues on that heading, will continue to kind of skirt the northern sides of these islands that would be up next after that. And then I kind of, you know, at this point, open up the discussion, Jack, a little bit as we wait for the latest recon data to come in, which we should be getting momentarily. But let's talk a little bit about the track after that. So the 12, 24, and 36-hour positions of Irma take it past Puerto Rico. And that kind of brings us to a real important point in the storm's track and in what its legacy will be made of. And it's where forecast models at this point are showing an unusual amount of uncertainty. We have quite a split at that point, with some models taking it to the west-southwest towards the island of Cuba, many over the island of Cuba, and others taking it further to the north, putting it nearer to the Bahamas and into the coast of South Florida. There are two real major players that are going to affect the future of Irma, one of them being a ridge over the central Atlantic and the other one being a trough forming over the Mississippi Valley. And both of those are going to play tug of war in order to win over the steering of this tropical cyclone. So elaborate a little bit, Jack, kind of on your opinion on that and you know, where are we going with this thing in terms of track about 12, 24 hours from now as it begins to pass the Dominican Republic? Are we, you know, are you, I guess, looking at a higher likelihood of a western track towards Cuba, or are you still favoring a further north and east solution closer to Miami? I know what the answer is for me, but I'll open it up for you first.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be very interesting to see where the storm tracks. And you mentioned the uncertainty. I'm looking at a plot of some of the European ensemble members. We actually have this available for free at weather.us now. So you can see where all these different ensemble members take the storm. And, you know, as you mentioned, some of them take the storm over Cuba. Some of the members take it towards Miami. Right now, I'm favoring a little bit of the southern track. I think the storm is going to make a very close pass to the coast of Cuba. But I am a little bit skeptical of the models that take it into the Gulf of Mexico, near the Havana-Cuba region. I think that you're going to see the storm make a very close pass to the northern coast of Cuba. But then I think it's going to turn a little bit sooner. And the reason for this is that, we've been discussing this over at 33 and Rain. There's a trough over the northeast U.S., and that has kind of changed a little bit the character of that trough in recent modeling. So recent modeling has had that slow down a little bit, stick around just a hair longer. And I think that that could exert just enough of a northeasterly a pull, so to speak, on the storm to kind of keep it out of, some of those ensemble members are putting this thing into the east central Gulf almost. I think that's unreasonable based on some of the latest upper level trends, but I think parts of northern Cuba should watch this very closely as the storm makes a very close pass to that region, and it will do so as a very intense storm. As we mentioned at the top of the show, there's not a whole lot to inhibit this storm. You know, it's not likely to weaken significantly. So right now I'd favor a track from the north of Puerto Rico, just north of Hispaniola, not making landfall in Hispaniola, passing very close to the Turks and Caicos, heading towards the north central coast of Cuba, and then turning north we'll have to watch that trough to see if it turns north more towards Nassau, Bahamas, turns north more towards Miami. But I think that based on recent trends, You know, the likelihood of that coming on being towards Tampa, for example, might be decreasing a little bit. But I'd be very curious to hear what you have to say on that.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in line with what you described. You know, it's always interesting. I got asked the question earlier, you know, why is this less of a straightforward forecast than Harvey was, which I thought was an interesting question. And the way that I explained it was Harvey had very little in the way of places to go once it made landfall. You know, it became pretty clear it was going to make landfall. The exact landfall location was in question. But after that, I mean, there was very little steering the storm at all. And that was very clear on almost every forecast model we looked at for quite some time before the storm actually went inland. And in this situation, there are two major features that are guiding the storm system. And you really do have a tug of war that's going on between the two of them. So the tropical cyclone steered in the mid-levels is being forced to the west-southwest at this point, largely by a mid-level and mid- and upper-level ridge that exists over the Atlantic Ocean. And this is a very vast feature. When you look at the 500 millibars, so the mid-level of the atmosphere, when you look at the height anomalies in that region, the above-normal height anomalies spread across a very large area, really from Newfoundland further down towards Bermuda. And the ridge itself extends over Florida for some time through Thursday evening. So that is going to keep Irma tracking to the west-northwest, and it does not allow the storm really to have an escape route of any sort to the north as it moves through. So that is what is providing the threat here over the next 12 to 24 hours for the islands that we have discussed at length. The second main feature is troughing that is building into the Mississippi River Valley by later Friday into Saturday. And this is the key to the forecast, if you ask me. I think the models have come into better agreement in terms of the mid-level ridge in the Atlantic Ocean. It's that troughing over the Mississippi Valley that's really kind of creating a convoluted setup. And you alluded to it in the fact that it has kind of changed pretty significantly since it was initially modeled. We now have an upper-low forecast to be situated over New England by Friday evening and Saturday morning. And as a blocking ridge moves over central Canada, you get a developing weak upper-level trough over the Mississippi Valley. But that is just enough in tandem with the trough over New England to open up room for a northerly turn. It wins the steering battle at that point with Irma as the ridge in the Atlantic Ocean moves much further to the north and east. And that's going to be the key right there, is when does that occur? You know, so in simplistic terms, when does the ridge begin to loosen up on the tug of Irma and keep, you know, right now pushing it to the south and not giving it that northerly escape route? When does that troughing begin to really interact with the storm system itself? And when it does, we know that that northerly turn is going to occur. So, you know, as we look at all the data, ensemble data is just so useful at this point, but it's unfortunate that we have such a large spread, even amongst the individual members of the reliable European model, which, as you said, you can do those individual members on weather.us, and we're always discussing them on 33 and Rain. And the more that I look at it, the more I agree with what you're saying, is that that really westerly track taking the storm through central Cuba up into the Gulf of Mexico seems to be a slight outlier on the western envelope at this point. And the GFS model from this afternoon, which takes the storm nearly over Nassau, Bahamas, and then into South Carolina, that seems like an easterly outlier at this point. So it's going to be a while until we can pinpoint exactly where this is going to track. But the more I look at the upper-level features, the more I think the storm will track near the northern coast of Cuba before turning to the north. And that could be unfortunate news for residents of South Florida.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And one other thing I'd add that kind of gives us confidence that that western forecast might be a bit of an outlier is there's another ridge actually in play, and it's centered over Texas. So you can see that on some of the, or basically actually all of the model data. And so that's going to act like a wall, just like the ridge over the Atlantic is acting like a wall, keeping this from going out to sea. That ridge over Texas is going to act like a wall, keeping it out of the Gulf, the western and central Gulf of Mexico. So I think some of the ensemble numbers that you have this system headed towards the Florida Panhandle, I think those are way off to the west due to that ridge coming in, also definitely due to that trough coming in. And one thing I would note with regard to predictability here So that trough is going to be very weak. It's a very subtle feature. You can hardly pick it out even on most of the height guidance. You have to look at, you know, some of the upper level energy, something that we call vorticity, to really see any signature at all there. And that's kind of giving the models a little bit of trouble because they're not really good at seeing those very, very weak features in the upper levels. You know, they can see, you know, that trough, that big trough over the northeast U.S. They can see that from a mile away, just like they can see that massive ridge that spans nearly the entire North Atlantic. They can see that from a mile away, too. But when it comes down to those very small kind of pockets of energy, those very tiny, very weak disturbances, like that one that plays such a big part in the forecast track for Irma, the models, that's kind of a blind spot for them. So the weak nature of such an important piece of the forecast, that's kind of throwing a wrench into things from the model's perspective. And that's why there's an unusual amount of uncertainty. You know, you mentioned Harvey. As an example of, we basically knew what that storm was going to do several days out in advance. It was going to move into the central Texas coast, and then it was going to stall. It wasn't going to move, and then it was going to kind of drift a little bit southeast. And we knew, we had high confidence in that because the two players there were two very strong ridges that the models could see, they could kind of analyze, and they had a good handle on that. And this is definitely not the case here where we have that very, very weak system. So I think you're definitely correct in saying that that there's a western edge. You know, this thing is going to go towards New Orleans. There's an eastern edge. This thing isn't going to go just out into the Atlantic in Nassau, Bahamas. So I think, unfortunately, at this point, all things are pointing to South Florida for being in the crosshairs of this system as we head into the latter part of the weekend and into early next week.
Yeah, agreed. Here's an interesting question from 33 in Rain, which is the interactive forum that we host the show through and works with weather.us and also New York Metro Weather, obviously. And this is a good one because I think it's kind of blunt and straight to the point, but if you could adjust the NHC track, are you making any adjustments or are you kind of leaving it the way it is right now? If you ask me, I'm pretty pleased with it. The more that I stare at it, obviously, you know, when you start looking at the NHC track, there are things that are more important than the actual positions of the storm at down to, you know, the specific mile. But for the sake of argument, if we're going to look at it and say, are we going to make any adjustments? I really don't think that there's any necessary at the moment. I'm pretty pleased with the way that it looks currently. I think there is some room for a slight northward adjustment near the Cuba coast. I don't know that the storm will actually track over the northern coast of Cuba. That's my main uncertainty point. And I think if I was forecasting, I would make the a cone of potential impacts a little bit wider near the Bahamas, but those are two really tiny things that don't really have much of an impact. Do you agree with that? I'm pretty much leaving it the same, maybe some minor tweaks.
Yeah, I completely agree. And if you look at that part that you were discussing, you know, right near northern Cuba, that's not, you know, the storm isn't forecast to get there until Saturday. So that's still, you know, at this point, a 4 or 5 day forecast. And a little bit of uncertainty is expected, honestly, in that range. So I think the NHC is doing a great job with the system. They always do a great job. I think if it were me, I might adjust that 5-day forecast point a little bit to the north and east. As I said, that big ridge of high pressure building in over Texas is going to keep the storm mostly out of the Gulf. But at this point, you know, if we're discussing changes of 30 or 50 miles 4 to 5 days out, if that's all that we're discussing here in terms of potential adjustments we'd make to that track, I think that reflects very well on the Hurricane Center and the amazing work that they do.
Agreed. I think that's a very good way to put it. It's easy to tweak and move around these positions, but at this point, you know, those positions we're looking at are Friday and Saturday, which are still several days out. And, you know, we're looking at the potential for adjustments are very obvious, I think, at that time frame. And I think we can kind of hone in on that track as we continue tracking the storm over the next couple of days and try to pinpoint things down. But overall, by and large, I would not make any adjustments to their current forecast. So that leads us into the next discussion, which you kind of touched on at the beginning of the show, which is what, if any, impacts do you think, you know, we talked about how close the storm is going to track to these islands. What impact do you think that the land interaction is going to have with this hurricane, which is, you know, currently in extremely ideal conditions for strengthening? You know, it's near the upper echelon of tropical systems in the Atlantic period, and in this region, it is the most impressive that we've ever seen in the satellite era. What impact do you think the storm tracking so close to the islands, especially obviously more impactful as you get towards islands like Puerto Rico and Dominican Republic, what impact do you think that they will have on the storm system strength?
Yeah, so I think that, of course, that's going to depend on the exact track of the system. Right now, the current forecast, both by the Hurricane Center, by the models, and I think this is something that we both agree on, I would say, you know, you're not looking for a landfall in Puerto Rico or the Dominican Republic, Hispaniola, Haiti. And so one thing to note, topography plays a big role here. There are some pretty tall mountains in Puerto Rico. There's some extremely tall, you know, over 10,000-foot mountains in Hispaniola. And if a hurricane, if the core of a hurricane moves over those mountains, it can be shredded, quite literally. You know, that you go from a Category 4, Category 5 hurricane down to a tropical storm in the matter of a day if the center can move over those mountains. Right now, that's not forecast. The center is forecast to remain out over water, but very close to the coast. So that does present some impacts. As the storm moves north, there are going to be southwest winds to the south over Hispaniola in Puerto Rico. And those southwest winds are going to pass over those 10,000-foot mountains. They're going to be forced to rise, and then they're going to be forced to sink down the backside of those mountains as those air parcels, that airstream moves towards the center of Irma. And I think that could potentially be a little bit of a wild card here, because if the storm tracks very close to the north coast of Hispaniola, it could get a little bit of an injection of drier, more stable air caused by what's called downsloping off those very high mountains. So, you know, do I think that's going to be enough to turn this into a tropical storm? Definitely not. But it could knock down a little bit, you know, a few miles an hour off the intensity. But overall, I think that's basically the only impact you're going to see from Puerto Rico and Hispaniola. The forecast becomes a little bit more unclear with regards to Cuba, because, you know, as we've been talking about, there's a little bit of uncertainty as to just how much interaction the system might have with Cuba. But I was looking at some of the topography maps for the island of Cuba, and I noticed that, you know, all the high mountains, you know, above 5,000 feet, are located at the very southeastern tip of Cuba, and that most of the north coast is flat. And doesn't have a lot of terrain features. And that's really important because, you know, as hurricanes move over land, they obviously weaken as their heat source and energy source is removed. But how fast that weakening happens and, you know, how much disruption there is to the inner core of a system depends on if there are mountains or anything like that, to any terrain features to kind of throw a bigger wrench into the overall organization of the system. And North Cuba doesn't have those terrain features. So I think if you see a landfall in Cuba, which can't be ruled out at this point, even though I think we both agree that it's unlikely, I think you're not going to see dramatic weakening, unfortunately.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We keep going over this and we keep getting to the same conclusion, which is that, you know, we might see an eyewall cycle. We might see interaction with land, but it doesn't appear that there's anything in the way of this storm right now that's going to cause dramatic weakening. You know, it might slow down the intensification. It might allow things to plateau and allow the storm to weaken a little bit. I believe the NHC actually weakened it to a Category 4, but that's still such an immensely impactful system. And that is the main takeaway, which is that even these interactions with land and you know, the potential eyewall replacement cycle, the system still remains quite strong. So that's kind of the takeaway here.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I'd throw in is, you know, unfortunately, we have a very recent case study in the impacts of a Category 4 landfalling hurricane, and that's with Harvey. You know, I think everybody's seen some of those pictures out of the Rockport area, you know, Port Aransas. That's utter devastation that you have in those areas. And I'd point out that that was with the landfall of a low-end Category 4 hurricane, you know, just barely above Category 3 status. And those 130-mile-an-hour plus winds still wreak immense havoc in those areas. So I definitely, you know, residents in the path of the storm should not see a downgrade to a Category 4, you know, downgrade. That's a term I don't necessarily like because, you know, even if you're downgrading the storm from Category 5 to Category 4, Category 4 hurricanes are, you know, as you said, still immensely powerful. And as we saw with Harvey, they can still completely wipe out whole communities in their path. So this, even if it weakens to a Category 4, even if it weakens to a Category 3, you're still going to see crazy impacts from the wind alone. And, you know, we haven't even talked about storm surge, rainfall, threats like that that can cause severe impacts, even, you know, with a tropical storm. We saw Harvey, lots of Harvey's rainfall was only as a tropical storm. Now, thankfully, we do not expect the kind of flooding that we saw with Harvey as Irma continues to move along at a fairly brisk pace throughout its journey towards the Florida Peninsula. But you get a landfall in Category 4 hurricane, you're going to have a lot of problems with storm surge. So that's going to be an issue even if it's downgraded from Category 5 status.
Yeah, and that kind of leads us into our final topic of the night, which is the preparedness steps for the folks that are in the path. And we kind of touched on this, but let's, like, do our best to put a bow on it here. Hurricane preparedness, to me, is a really it's a fickle thing because people, for whatever reason, don't seem to be willing to make preparations in advance. And I don't, you know, I'm not too sure what the reason for that is. There's not, you know, any rhyme or reason as it seems to me. I've done my best to try to figure it out, but it appears that people are hesitant to make plans in advance for a hurricane. And a lot of that, I think, might stem from the fact that the word uncertainty can often be intertwined with the word complacency when it comes to actual actions from that uncertainty. But uncertainty is not meant to be something that, you know, leads to or causes a complacency. It's meant to be a, you know, something that's a little bit more broad brush as opposed to being specific in this regard. So obviously, if you are on the immediate islands that are in the direct path in the storm over the next 12 hours, your plan should be complete and you should be in a safe place, lowest level concrete, if you can get to that location. Those islands that are in the direct path, I think, you know, the heaviest rain bands will be coming in about probably 2 hours from now. In the center of the storm, again, forecast over Barbuda, 2 a.m. Atlantic Standard Time. That is a different conversation than tomorrow afternoon, which brings the storm towards Puerto Rico. They still have a little bit of time to prepare. They will have tonight and tomorrow morning before the winds really start to kick up. What's your advice in terms of preparation steps for those that are in Puerto Rico and are quickly, you know, obviously the South Shore can consider this as well with a little less urgency, but the North Shore, specifically where the eyewall might ride along the North Shore to Puerto Rico, what are the recommended preparedness steps for those folks here over the next 12 hours?
Yeah, so if I was living on the northeast coast of Puerto Rico, definitely put your hurricane plan into action now. Hopefully you have developed a hurricane plan well in advance of this storm. You know, that's just a general tip for anyone along the entire east coast. You know, even though we can rule out areas, you know, direct impact to the northeast from Irma now, I would advise, and I have advised, you know, friends and family, all up and down the East Coast, it's always good to have a plan days, weeks, months, years before a hurricane hits, you know, things that you would do. for Puerto Rico, you don't have a lot of time. If you can get, if you need supplies, food, water, and non-perishable food, that's a big one. You know, be prepared for power outages. If that means stocking up on batteries, do that. If that means stocking up on fuel for your portable generator, then do that. One thing, never run your portable generator inside your house or inside any sort of structure. That'll cause carbon monoxide issues. So that's just something to keep in mind when the power goes out in these areas. Yeah, just stockpile important documents and items. Keep a little bit of cash on hand, you know, in case you are in situations after the storm that, you know, computers are down, whatever, you know, you need cash for that. So that's what I'd be doing in Puerto Rico. As you head, you know, more towards the Bahamas, North Coast, Hispaniola, Cuba, definitely start getting supplies. And basically the same things that you have, people in those areas have more time. So the storm is forecast to make its closest approach to Hispaniola on Thursday afternoon. And it's forecast to move into the southern Bahamas, Cuba area on Friday. So you have a few days. If you're told to evacuate in those areas, do so. Heed that warning. And listen to local officials for instructions that are pertinent to your area. You know, I don't know what the storm surge risk is for any particular location in the Bahamas or in Cuba, but your local officials do. Your local national your local weather service offices, your local TV weather folks, they all know that information. So stay tuned to local sources for information that, you know, you're not going to get from people far away from the system. If you're in Florida, the storm is still, you know, 5 days away. So you have plenty of time to, you know, start thinking about what you're going to do. Even though we've mentioned forecast uncertainty, you know, things that we don't know in the next, or, you know, about this forecast, there's some things that we do know about Florida. Florida, I can, you know, correct me if you disagree, John, but forecast Florida, southern Florida, I think is very likely to see tropical storm conditions at least. You know, Irma's a fairly large system, has a fairly large wind field, and it's forecast to move either over or very close to the South Florida region. So, at the very least, residents in these areas should be preparing for tropical storm to low-end hurricane-force winds. The core of the hurricane, you know, as we've been talking about, there's still a little bit of uncertainty as to where that's going to go exactly. You know, wherever the core of the hurricane, that eye wall, you know, ring of thunderstorms, that's going to determine who sees, you know, the 100-mile-an-hour plus winds. It's still a little bit too early to say exactly where those extreme impacts are going to be, but I think anyone in South Florida should be preparing to evacuate in case that order is given. They should be stocking up on supplies. They should be assembling important documents that they may need to protect or take with them, and just generally, you know, follow instructions from local sources as to what you should be doing to prepare for a hurricane.
Very well said. You know, I think following local sources is such a huge part of it. Everyone has local administration, local emergency management that will give you the information that you may not be able to find easily. Most of it is very easy to find online. But if you have issues with that, get in touch with your local Office of Emergency Management or local officials, and they will tell you everything you need to know in terms of evacuation plans, flood zones, things like that. And in terms of hurricane preparedness, there's a great plethora of sources available in terms of the essentials that you should have available during a hurricane if you are going to stay and not evacuate. And obviously, if evacuation orders are issued, we don't recommend that. But if you are in the path of the storm and you are there, you should have quite a bit of essentials, and you should get to a safe place in your house, which hopefully is concrete and sturdy. So in the U.S., like you described, if you are in South Florida or anywhere really along the southeast, mid-Atlantic coast, even all of Florida, it's better to be safe than sorry. And you should have a plan in place. You should know your evacuation routes. But especially on the south coast of Florida, the southern half of the state of Florida in particular, it's time to start kicking up those plans into higher gear. You should be starting to take those action plans, getting the essentials. If you do have a generator, making sure that you have the ability to run that generator, making sure that you are in a safe place, that your family's in a safe place, that you have the ability to get out if there are evacuation orders issued. And just continue to monitor the storm over the next several days, next few days, not several, and try to watch and see as the forecasters begin to pin down the exact track of Irma here over the next 36, 48, and 72 hours. So what we also recommend is following along with us at 33 and Rain, at weather.us, at New York Metro Weather, looking for the latest forecasts, for the latest model images, for the latest discussion. We've got it all covered for you, every facet of it. And we will provide the latest information as soon as we can get it, obviously, and look forward to discussing it with you. And Jack, you know, you can elaborate on this a little bit as well, but you know, my main focus really is to kind of bridge that gap in communication between meteorology, which can kind of get pretty complicated, and the public understanding of it, try to break it down. And so that's what we tried to do here on this on the show, and what we also try to do on our you know, prospective endeavors. I think that's such an important piece of this, is taking something complicated and breaking it down so folks can relate to it and understand it.
Yeah, I think that's definitely an awesome and important thing to do. You know, just a little plug for weather.us, you know, at weather.us, what we're trying to do is take some of that weather information that has historically been kind of reserved for meteorologists only, and we want to bring that where for everyone to look at and discuss. And so, you know, we've thrown out the ECMWF for free, so that's notoriously been restricted access. You know, you have to pay, you have to have special connections to get that. You know, we put that out there for free so that, you know, average folks can see that data for themselves, and, you know, and use that to further their understanding of the weather and how the atmosphere works. So I think that, you know, we at weather.us are definitely in agreement that bridging the gap between the public and meteorology is really important and a really worthwhile goal. So we're looking forward to helping folks, you know, work through that stuff in advance of Irma, and we'll be here when the next storm threatens, whenever that is. I do just want to say quickly that recon plane that we've been talking about earlier in the show, it has made it through the eye, and unfortunately it has found a pressure 2 millibars lower than the APM advisory, at least extrapolated pressure. Was 914 millibars compared to the official pressure at 8 p.m. from the Hurricane Center, which was 916 millibars. So that's an indication that Irma continues to strengthen despite already being an immensely powerful storm. So we'll be watching it all in the days to come.
Yeah, for sure. I'm honestly, based on the satellite presentation and everything, I'm not totally surprised that the pressure was observed lower. It looks like, actually, when you look at the Hurricane Hunter mission, they did a couple of circles there in the eye to try to figure out, you know, where the lowest pressure was there. Maybe just one circle, but a little bit of a wobbly circle there. But they were able to get the extrapolated pressure of 914.9 millibars, which is obviously lower than the latest APM advisory. So it'll be interesting to get the wind data here over the next couple of minutes. And obviously we will be discussing that on 33 and Rain. We will be using our very best knowledge to try to predict the coming days of impacts from the storm, and make sure that you continue to, as we discussed, get your preparedness plan in place. No need for panic right now on the mainland United States. If you are in South Florida, again, no need for panic, but you should be kicking up those preparedness plans into a little bit of a higher gear and making sure that you are ahead of this instead of behind it and scrambling at the last minute, because that's the last place that that anybody wants to be. So, Jack, thank you for joining us here. Hopefully this is the first of many over the coming months. It's going to be an exciting winter. We can probably have a whole entire show about that in the coming months as we get towards the winter forecasting season. Dive into that a little bit. And hopefully this is the first of many. We did a couple of these shows last year, Weatherize, and it was pretty well received. We were really excited about the feedback we got on it, so we're really excited to bring it back this year. And Jack, we hope to have you on several times here over the next coming months and years.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Thank you. This has been a lot of fun, and I look forward to chatting with everyone about the weather from Irma to winter storms, everything in between, all my 33 and rain. So I'm over there a lot. It's an awesome site. So I look forward to seeing everyone there.
Thank you, Jack. And again, thanks to everyone for tuning in. If you are in the path of the storm, again, preparedness plans in place. Get ahead of it, even if it seems a little bit extreme, because you don't want to be the one that's scrambling at the last minute as this thing approaches. It is a very dangerous storm system. So, again, thank you to everyone at 33 and Rain. Thank you to weather.us. And thank you, as always, to the team here at New York Metro Weather. We were really excited to put this together. And, Jack, thank you for joining me tonight. For everyone else that helped to make this show happen, you know who you are. Thank you so much. And we will hopefully have another one coming up here this week, and we will announce that in the coming days. For everyone that listened, we appreciate it more than you can know. Thanks so much, and have a great night, guys. Take care.
Thanks.